This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and we're kind of having a big day tomorrow. I'm going to go ahead and turn up the air conditioning a little bit. It is a beautiful, warm day here in the Ozarks, and we're getting some rain tomorrow, according to all the forecasts. Yay! That's not why it's a big day. By the way, it is episode 179. 179. Unbelievable. I tell people that now. I say, oh, I do a little podcast. And they, oh, you do a podcast? Yep, up to episode 179. They look at me like, what? Yeah. I don't know when to quit. That's my problem. Anyway, so we are having kind of a big day tomorrow. We are going down to Silver Dollar City. And it should be fun. Just for a little bit. And we've got our granddaughter who turned 2 in June, so she's like 25 months old now, and she's never been down to Silver Dollar City. And when we went down to sing for that wedding this summer, my daughter and granddaughter came along, and we took her to the aquarium. She really seemed to enjoy that. So as our schedules all arranged, all the parties involved have some time off tomorrow, and so we've all decided we're heading down to Silver Dollar City. This should be very interesting, because Hurricane, what is it, Ivan? No, I don't know. Whatever hurricane is going on in the Gulf right now, it just made landfall in Louisiana, is dumping bucket loads of rain on Louisiana. It's then going to be extending up, and we're going to be getting some of that. We're hoping it's going to come in bands. And so we're going to go down to Silver Dollar City and probably get rained on at some point. We're going to try to get in and see shows while it's raining and then walk around and see the rest of the park while it's not raining. And we don't know how many people are actually going to be down there, because the kids are also out of school before the weekend for Labor Day. And so, I don't know. We'll see how this goes. Maybe if they think it's raining, nobody will go. There's always people at Silver Dollar City. So this should be fun. In other news, I thought I was on the last chapter last week. Grumpy Old Prophets. And I started writing the quote unquote last chapter, and it turned into 2 chapters. Like, okay. So now I think I'm on the last chapter. And it's just, when you're trying to write a short book, it's always a little bit of a challenge, especially for me, because there's always scenes that I can blow out bigger and wider and do things with. But you know, you got to keep coming back to, what is the purpose of these books? Purpose is to get the message across and get done. Because some people just, they don't like books that are over 200 pages, you know. So he's got to get in, get the job done, out. And but I think I've hit the happy medium. I've got one little speech that I've got to work on. Going to work on some of that this evening between King David and Mary. Get through that. And then I got a big speech, big encounter between Mary and Moses and Elijah. And then we're out. There may be one little encounter between Mary and Mary Magdalene, and then we're out. So I had hoped I would be dangerously close to having the book finished by this week, but maybe this weekend. Obviously not going to do much writing tomorrow, but I should have time on Saturday, should have time on Sunday, and I should have all day on Monday. So if it falls into place, then we'll see. You know, these are really important chapters though. So, you know, these are like this is the final chapter of the entire series. So this kind of has to be right. So if it extends a week or two, that's okay while I get this right. But I know where I should be going, and I know what it's supposed to be accomplishing. So we'll see. The speech between King David and Mary has turned out to be a little tricky, but we'll get it figured out. Anyways, good week at work. Was able to get some things accomplished. I actually had one little project that came in about half the projected time, which, hey, we always like it when that happens. And then picked up a little work from another little project that they were trying to get done, and the guy who was supposed to be doing that part was really busy. And so this afternoon I picked up a little bit from him on that, and I may finish it up on Tuesday. We actually talked through enough that if he gets some time, he may try to get it finished on Friday. And if he doesn't get it finished, then I'll just pick it up on Tuesday and try to get it finished for him. But all is well. Last week, I talked about the paradox of choice, and it said there was a follow-on TED Talk to that. And so this week, I'd like to talk about the follow-on TED Talk to that and hopefully point out by the time it's all said and done how I feel like the presenter is actually prejudicial in the terms that he uses. And we'll get to that eventually. The name of the talk was The Surprising Science of Happiness. And when we get to the end of all this, we will find that if we undo the prejudicial nature of the terminology, we might discover that, in fact, it's not that surprising. But we'll get to that in a minute. So, The Surprising Science of Happiness, this was by Dan Gilbert. Excellent talk. I would recommend it. Lots and lots of fun. He started out talking about a very interesting time in evolution, which I am not going to get into the whole thing about evolution. Maybe sometime I'll talk about evolution. But when it comes to evolution, it doesn't really matter to me how God accomplished what he accomplished, whether he did it in 6 days with apparent age, or whether he reached down at some point and said, hey, that's pretty close to what I need, and went switch, flip, 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 and flipped a bunch of switches, and then breathed into man the breath of life. It doesn't matter to me. I don't care. But anyways, I will talk about it from his perspective of evolution, simply because this is what he said. So he was talking about 2 million years in human evolution and how that was really just a blink of an eye in the larger scheme of things. And yet in this blink of an eye, something really unusual happened, that brain size tripled, that brain mass tripled, I should say. And he was talking about what was the advantage of brain mass tripling, and he said something that as soon as he said it, I went, oh yeah, that's right. But I had never heard it put this way before, so it was very interesting. And he was saying, all right, so it's tripled, so what actually happened structurally? And he said, what happened structurally is that humanoids developed a frontal lobe in their brains, and specifically a prefrontal cortex. So he says, okay, so what was so important that we needed this prefrontal cortex that made it so valuable that we would expend such energy to develop this thing? Which is very interesting terminology, but we'll just leave that lie. Maybe we'll come back to that in another podcast. And he said, well, it turns out that the prefrontal cortex does a lot of things, but one of the most important things it does is an experience simulator. And when he said this, I was like, oh, that's good. He was saying that none of the other creatures on this planet, as near as we could figure out, have this ability to have an experience simulator. By that, he was saying, we don't have to constantly try things out to see if they work to make a determination as to whether we should do those things. The example that he gave, which was an excellent example, is that Ben and Jerry don't have to whip up a batch of liver and onion ice cream to determine that's probably not something that they want to spend their energy on, which is true. You can just say liver and onion ice cream. Nope, don't think cool. Boiled okra ice cream. Nope, don't think so. Okay, so he said what's interesting is this experience simulator does not always work as well as we think it might. It does not always reflect reality. And through all of this, I just have a general pay attention to what he's saying, and then we'll wrap it up at the end. But from here on out, I'm just going to say what he said, and then we'll wrap it up at the end. So it doesn't work very well, according to him. He said, for instance, we can show you two pictures. We can show you a picture of someone who's just won the lottery. We can show you a picture of someone who has just become a paraplegic. And we can ask you to use your experience simulator and to say, which of these do you believe is going to be happier in a year? And he said, all of us, when we're taking this pop quiz, will say, well, obviously, the guy who won the lottery is going to be happier. That just makes sense. Except, it's not true. He said, if you actually look at the studies where we investigate people who have won the lottery and investigate people who have become paraplegics, and we examine their states of happiness a year later, what we find is they're basically the same response. They are equally about as happy with their lives. He said part of the way the experience simulator does not work very well is we have what he called an impact bias. In other words, we believe that how things impact us will be fundamentally different, that if we win the lottery, we will be fundamentally happier than if we don't win the lottery or we have something bad happen to us. And in fact, once you actually start studying all this, he came up with a very interesting statement that he said there was a recent study showing that major life traumas, once you get 3 months down the road from it, a lot of times they don't really have any impact on your happiness at all. Which, that's very interesting. And so the rest of his talk was talking about the fact that we have something called a psychological, what he deemed, somebody deemed, a psychological immune system, that we synthesize happiness. What's interesting is he then went on to say, so I wanted to see this at work, and he said, I've talked about this a lot. And he said, so one day I just challenged myself to say, okay, can I just pick up a paper and find people who have synthesized happiness? Bearing in mind that his definition of synthesized happiness is not the happiness that we would expect to find, that we would predict to find when we are using our experience simulator. He talked about, he picked up a copy of the New York Times, found a story by Jim Wright, who used to be leader of the House, until a young upstart named Newt Gingrich find out that he had made this weird book deal, and it was kind of, you know, not on the up and up. Jim Wright lost everything, lost his career, lost his wealth, you know, lost everything because he got kicked out. And yet, now Jim Wright says, you know, in essence, I'm happy. And according to this speaker, he was saying, see, that's synthesized happiness. Another example he gave was a man talking about how the experiences he had had in life were glorious, glorious. This man is a 78-year-old man who had spent the better part of his life in jail for a murder he did not commit and was eventually exonerated through DNA testing. He was in jail, and yet he came out of the experience saying it was glorious. And the speaker was saying, okay, you know, obviously this man is synthesizing happiness. He also talked about the guy who was the original Beatles for the drummer. There was an article on him in the paper about how he was very happy that he hadn't stayed with the Beatles. He talked about a guy in this paper. There was an article about a guy who had seen the McDonald's brothers and had talked to them about franchising their stuff, but he couldn't raise the $3,000 because the people he was trying to raise the $3,000 said, nobody buys hamburgers. And yet this guy was happy that he was not able to buy a franchise for McDonald's. All of these people, the definition of the speaker, synthesized happiness. And so it was funny. He made a funny joke. He said, so here's the secret to happiness. Amass wealth and power and then completely lose it. Spend your entire life in prison. Make someone else really, really rich. And whatever you do, don't join the Beatles. And so, of course, it's very cute. Everybody laughs. Ha, ha, ha. So it's very cute. Because these are the ways that we synthesize happiness. And he said, we smirk because we believe that synthesized happiness is not the same quality as what we might call natural happiness. That in his definition, natural happiness is what, when we get what we want, and synthetic happiness is when we make do when we don't get what we want. And he said it's pretty simple to understand why, in his terminology, we have this idea, because how would the economic engines keep churning if we actually believed that not getting what we wanted could make us as happy as getting what we wanted? And he apparently paraphrased a friend with the statement, a shopping mall full of Zen monks is not going to be particularly profitable because they don't want stuff. Put a little asterisk by that. That's an interesting statement. So, they wanted to do some experiments to watch synthesized happiness in progress, and these are very interesting experiments. So what they would do is they would bring in people, and they would set in front of them six prints, maybe by Monet, all impressionistic prints, set out six prints, and they would have the person put the prints in order of how they liked the prints from 1 to 6, 1 being the most liked, 6 being the least liked. Then what they would do is they would say, okay, why don't you pick, Then they would say, we have a couple of these prints extras in the back, and they would always bring out whatever was print number 3 and print number 4. So two prints that were pretty close in how the people liked them, but not identical. And then they would say, and you're welcome to choose one. They said invariably the person would pick number 3. Then what they would do is he said, you can come back 15 minutes later, you can come back a week later, you can bring the person back in, you can put all six prints in front of them and say, why don't you arrange them again? What you find is the one that was in spot number 3 will move to spot number 2. People will like it better because they chose it. And the one that was in spot number 4 will move to spot number 5. People will like it less because they didn't choose it. And in his mind, that is synthesized happiness in action. And he said, you can run this experiment over and over again. You can even run it for people who don't have short-term memory. They went into a hospital where there were people who had a loss of short-term memory, either through alcohol abuse or whatever. They ran exactly the same experiment and just had them choose. They didn't give it to them because they'd forget. They walk out of the room for half an hour. They come back in, run the experiment again. Exactly the same thing happens. There is something happening inside people's brain that it actually changes your likes and dislikes when you make a choice. That's very interesting. They ran another experiment where they brought in people and they said, oh, this is a photography course. Gave them cameras, had them go out, shoot photos, all kinds of photos. They had them come back in then, taught them how to use a darkroom. They did enlargements of their photos. And then they told them, okay, You need to pick your two favorite pictures of all these. So people would pick the two. And then they did one of two things. One thing they did was saying, okay, well, just pick your favorite one because we have to have the other one and we're going to send it to, quote, headquarters, unquote. Or they said, same thing, except they said, and if you want to change your mind in any time in the next 3 or 4 days, you can do that, but then that will be it. So with one group, they allowed them to choose, and they had to make a final choice right now. With the other group, they allowed them to choose and then waffle on that choice for 3 or 4 days. They said what was very interesting was that when they came back to those people later, the people who had the ability to waffle were less satisfied with their choice. The synthetic, according to him, the synthetic happiness generator worked less well when people had more options. And this is the reason that he concludes that the synthetic happiness generator doesn't work very well. He said, because when we gave the course again and we told people this was what was going to be happening at the end, and we gave them the ability to decide whether they wanted a hard choice or whether they wanted to be able to choose over a period of 3 or 4 days, 2/3 of the class said they wanted to choose over the period of 3 or 4 days. In other words, most people took the choice that would eventually lead to a state where they were less happy. And by this, he concludes that our synthetic happiness generator, well, and our experience simulator doesn't work that well. Specifically, that the experience simulator doesn't work that well. Because we aren't predicting, we don't know that we'll actually be less happy if we have more choice. Which is pretty interesting. It's very, very interesting. So his conclusions then that he comes to is this. We should have preferences that lead us to one future over another. But when those preferences drive us too hard, too fast, because we have overrated the difference between the futures, we are at risk. When our ambition is bounded, it leads us to work joyfully. When our ambition is unbounded, it leads us to lie, to cheat, to steal, to hurt others, to sacrifice things of real value. When our fears are bounded, we're prudent, we're cautious, we're thoughtful. When our fears are unbounded and overblown, we are reckless and we are cowardly. The lesson I want to leave with you from this data is that our longings and our worries are both to some degree overblown because we have within us the capacity to manufacture the very commodity that we are constantly changing when we choose experience. I'm getting my mail. One moment. Okay. So there you go. Synthetic happiness versus natural happiness. Now, I said right at the beginning of this that I felt like some of his terms were prejudicial. And the terms that I think are prejudicial are the terms synthetic happiness and natural happiness. Because I think, if you've listened to this podcast for any time at all, that you will know that next I'm going to say, I think there are engines at work here that are not being accounted for. I'm going to back into my garage. And of course, obviously, I have a hammer, so to me, all the world is a nail. What we're not accounting for here is the role of flesh and spirit. And if we say natural happiness is what we get, is what we have when we get what we want, well, getting what we want is really a response of the flesh. Because the flesh sits there and says, oh, if I could just have more money, then I'd be happy. Oh, I'd just have it. And then when you get that, the flesh jumps up and down. Yeah, you got it. Oh, it's so wonderful. You got it. Yay. And then the next day, the flesh starts going, oh. Okay, that was nice to get that, but is this really all there is? I mean, that's the game the flesh makes with us. That it drives us and drives us and drives us to a goal, and then when it gets us to that goal, then it starts sighing. Oh, okay, well, got that. Wow, this wasn't nearly as fun as I thought it was going to be. That's flesh. What spirit does is very different. Spirit celebrates being. Spirit celebrates experience. Spirit celebrates knowledge and wisdom. And what he terms synthetic happiness actually sounds a whole lot like, more like maturity than it does to me sound like something synthetic, because that happiness that comes from growing, that comes from living, that comes from making good decisions, that happiness is really more of a calm that is based on the choices that we've made and moving forward. And it doesn't surprise me at all that people who have to make a choice and that's the end of it are more content than people who can make a choice and then waffle on it. Because if the flesh knows that you can waffle on that choice, then it'll start feeding you all kinds of junk. Oh, maybe you want the other one. Maybe you want the other picture. Now that was kind of nice. Maybe you should go pick that other picture. You know, so then you pick that one. Oh, I'm not really sure about this picture. Maybe the first one really would have been better. Probably the first one really would have been better. And it's got something it can dig its heels in. And so what you end up with is, even after that experience, it always goes, oh, you know, I don't think you made that choice right, you know. Whereas it knows it can call into question your choice that's made over 3 or 4 days because you had time to think about it. But when it comes to something that you just have to make that decision, you can give yourself a little more leeway because you can say, okay, I made a quick decision, but there's nothing I can do about it now. It's over. And so then the flesh shrugs and it goes on to something else. And so the key to happiness in my mind really is not to make a fortune and then lose it. I know this was just a joke that he made. It's not to, you know, make somebody else fabulously wealthy. It's not to spend your life in jail. It's not to never, ever join the Beatles. But the key to contentment and happiness in life is to make good decisions every day. And even if my wife is coming into the garage, and even if you have made decisions in the past, realize that you can't really do anything to change those decisions. You should just come to peace with those. And then look at your life as it is and decide, what decisions can I make right now? And I think what we're seeing in the people that have quote unquote synthetic happiness have really come to grips with the fact that, okay, I did those things. They were not the right decisions. I can't do anything about them now, but I'm going to learn from them. I'm going to move forward. I'm going to make better decisions tomorrow. And I think that is a key to happiness because it helps us then listen less to the flesh and more to the spirit. And as we move along in life, as we listen less to the flesh and more to the spirit, then that we really do find the secret to true, true happiness. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.